Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now it's out the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is February the 8th, 2024, or it is the 11th day of Adar, 2028. It's our first study on this Sabbath. We're going to start with 11 symbolic code number 12. The kingdom of heaven likened unto 10 virgins, 11 symbolic code number 12, by V.T. Holliff. Prayer of thought, it is a law, it is a law of the mind, that it gradually adapts itself to the subjects upon which it is trained to dwell. If occupied with the commonplace matters only, it will become dwarfed and enfeebled. If never required to grapple with a difficult problem, it will after a time almost lose the power of growth. As an educating power, the Bible is without a rival. In the word of the Yahweh, the mind finds subject for the deepest thought, the loftiest aspiration, for the Bible is the most instructive history that men possess. It came fresh from the fountain of the eternal truth, and a divine hand has preserved its purity through all the ages. It lights up the far distant past where the human research seeks vainly to penetrate. In the Yahweh's word, we behold the power that laid the foundation of the earth and has stretched out the heaven. Here only can we find a history of our race unsullied by the human prejudice or the human pride. Here are recorded the struggles, the defeats, and the victory of the greatest man this world has ever known. Here the great problems of the duty and destiny are unfolded. The curtain that separates the visible from the invisible world is lifted, and we behold the conflict of the opposing forces of the good and evil. From the first entrance of sin until the final triumph of the righteous and truth, righteousness and truth, and all is but a revelation of the character of the Yahweh, unto the revelant study as brought into communion with the infinite mind. Such a study will not only refine and ennoble the character, but it cannot fail to expand and invigorate the mental powers. For the teaching of the Bible has a vital bearing upon a man's prosperity and all the relations of this life. It unfolds the principles that are the cornerstone of a nation, prosperity, principles with which is bound up the well-being of society, and which are the safeguard of the family, principles without which no man can attain usefulness, happiness, and honor in this life, or can hope to secure the future immortal life. There is no position in life, no phase of the human experience for which the teaching of the Bible is not an essential preparation. Studied and obeyed, the word of Yahweh would give to the will of man of the stronger and more active intellect than will the closest application unto all the subjects that the human philosophy embraces, for it would give men of the strength and solidarity of the character, of the keen perception and sound judgment, men who would be an honor to Yahweh and a blessing unto the world. Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen G. White, page 596. That's the prayer thought. Another person, a brother who is visiting us, has asked me to give a study on the kingdom. And with Yahweh's help, I shall endeavor to do my best to bring out certain facts on that subject. Let us turn to Matthew 24:42-43. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Yeshua doth come, the Son of Yahweh. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. For these verses convey the ideas that no one knows the day and the hour of Yeshua's coming. And therefore, Yeshua admonishes his people to be ready all the time. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt to break into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. But the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom the Yeshua hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? For this implies that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. They must be giving meat in due season. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. We as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist, should be able to reason out the lesson that is in these verses according unto the verse 45. For the Yeshua has made someone ruler over his household, who would that be in the Yahweh's church? And the denomination, if we are to attach this to someone, it would necessarily be associated to the president of the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist, who heads all their work, and since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included and what the Yeshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it could mean. Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made a ruler over his household to give them meat in due season. Should not meat in the due season be a message from Yahweh, especially addressed unto his people and applicable at that time? For another name for meat in the due season is present truth. So then, the servant is to give the household present truth. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. If our application is now right, that this is speaking to the Seventh Adventist denomination, this prior unto the Yeshua's coming, then we must understand that the Yahweh, the Father of Yeshua, wants his servant, or Yeshua, the Son of Yahweh, wants his servant to give unto his household meat in due season until he comes. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. This verse implies that the Yahweh has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his goods, but when he proves true by attending into his business of faithfully giving unto his household meat in the due season until the Yeshua comes, then Yahweh, the Father of Yeshua, is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise. Matthew 24:48-50. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, Yeshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. That hour is the 12th parabolic hour, and that's what we're in now. We're in the harvest time. If no one is to know the day and the hour until Yeshua comes, then how could this servant be aware of the day and the hour? Do you see that one statement seems to contradict the other? No one knows the hour, the day. Therefore, Yahweh's people must be ready for the event to occur at almost any time. If this servant does not faithfully perform his duties, then when? Then when the Yahshua is about to come, that servant will not be aware of it. Is that not how you understand these two statements? Up until a certain time, Yahweh's people do not know the day and the hour. But it may, up until a certain time, Yahweh's people do not know the day and the hour. But if they continue to receive meat in the due season, a day will come when this servant is going to be made aware of that hour of that day. For this illustration was not given unto us alone, but unto all of Yahweh's people, ever since it was written, and they were warned to be ready all the time, because no one knows the day and the hour of his coming. But as the truth progresses and the word of the Yahweh unrolls, Yahweh's servants in the end are to be aware of the day and the hour. Does it not say that? That is just what it does say. But what is the danger here? What caused the servants to begin to eat and drink with the drunken? They said, the Yahshua delayeth his coming. There were only two occasions in all church history that men complained that the Yeshua delayed his coming. They were the first or early Christians who had expected Yeshua to come immediately. They thought surely it would not be very long before the Yeshua would come in the manner as he had gone up, but for almost 2,000 years have passed since the promise was given, and the Yeshua has not come yet. So there was a chance for the earlier Christians to complain that the Yeshua had delayed his coming. At the commencement of the church, the Christian church. Rather, we are speaking of the time when the Yeshua is ready to come, and the time of the end. For you know that there was a people on this end of the church's history who also expected Yeshua to come long before now. I suppose you would say they were the Millerites, but to this I cannot agree, because there was no delay for them, for they had set the date for Yeshua's coming, and the outcome for them was not a delay, but a bitter disappointment. The Seventh-day Adventists, though, since 1844, believed that in their lifetime, in their generation, the Yeshua would come and take them to heaven. You that have been Seventh-day Adventists for a long time, or even for a short time, know that it was their expectation. Instead, however many of these are in their graves today, in the early days, our churches used to have a sign hanging inside reading a thus, for the gospel preached unto all the world and this generation. Those signs have long since been taken down. 100 years ago, everybody who knew Adventists knew what were our expectations, but it is not the case today. I can also recall that after I became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard the brethren say that Yeshua will come almost momentarily, that Yeshua has not come yet. But they erroneously concluded that Yeshua would come in a few years, but it was to their disappointment, or to their detriment. When the time passed, they became careless. We see then that, according to our early expectations as Adventists, Yeshua's supper, or the Yeshua apparently has delayed his coming. And inasmuch no other people in all the Christian world ever expected Yeshua to come, as the Adventists did, then this lesson is applicable only unto us. Moreover, when at first Yahweh's people expected the Yahshua to come soon, they all seemed to conform unto the diet regulations which were given unto the church to keep them apart from the world. But when Yahweh's people thought that the Yahshua had delayed his coming, what did they do? The majority laid aside their adventitious habits of the eating and and living, for they seem not to have understood that the prescribed mode of living that the Yahweh had enjoined upon them was not limited unto any certain time, but it was to be binding upon them until Yahshua come. What will Yahshua do about those who became careless because they thought Yahshua the leader was coming? Letter 3, Matthew 24, 48-51. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yahshua of that servant shall come a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What a terrible disappointment it will be for the people that for a time waited for the Yahshua's coming, lined up with his program, and then departed from it. To these, Yahshua comes when they are not expecting him. Matthew 25:1. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamp and went forth to meet the bridegroom. This verse begins with the word then, indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yahshua come as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time that the Yahshua come, the kingdom shall be likened unto something. For the kingdom of the Yahshua as a crown kingdom does not exist today, as you know. Then what is meant here by the kingdom? It is referring to the people that are candidates for citizenship in it, who are the subjects for the kingdom of Yahweh, if they are not the church. Then the people comprising the church of Yahweh shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:3-5. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps, and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps, while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. When this happens, the Adventist church is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right, but they did not take with them more oil than what was in the lamps. For they therefore had no extra reserve of oil. What does oil stand for? When used in a lamp, it gives light which illuminates your way. Does it not? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone causes you to know where you are going. Only 5 of the virgins have extra oil, for they had availed themselves of the extra oil. So that they could refill their lamps in case the oil that is in them should be used before they reach their destination. For the light that came in 1844, for the lighting of the path forward, or for the lighting of the path forward, was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Those that received this light called themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. And the words used in this parable, they fitted their lamps, they filled their lamps with the oil, which represented the judgment of the dead message. Then came the tarrying time. It is true that the Millerite expected the Yahshua to come onto the earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844. And it did not appear, and he did not appear. They concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and they were no longer known by a name. It was the Seventh-day Adventist that expected the Yahshua to come not on a certain day, but in a generation, in a certain period of time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that the Yahshua delayed his coming. Matthew 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." For the cry for the meeting of the bridegroom comes after the time of the tarrying. Matthew 25:7-12. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us your oil, for our lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, there shall be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather unto them that sell, and buy for yourself." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, "Master, Master, open to her." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." An announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh. All of the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come from the general conference, you know that all the members would fill their vessels with the oil, and all would have it. For the facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there. All trim their lamps. We are told what is the implication in that. We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message to the change and the circumstances or events. But what happens? The lamps go out. That indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. For the Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. For they will then realize that the oil in their lamp, the judgment of the dead message, is not sufficient to guide them through this situation. Then they will long for the extra oil, additional light, the message of the judgment for the living, which had previously been available unto them. But they had fail to obtain it. Thus, feeling their urgent need of it, they will demand it from those who have it. But it will be too late. By the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber, they find that he has already entered and closed the door. For they knock, they peek, thinking he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear him say? Verily, I say unto you, I know you not. And the door remains shut. Probation has closed for them. Let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is a bridegroom. But where is the bride? And who are the virgins? The cry was, behold, the bridegroom cometh. This cry was not to the bride, but to the virgin. The virgins can only represent the guest. Who is the bride? Let us then, turn to Revelation 21 for help to identify who is the bride. Revelation 21:9-10. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, and I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit unto a great and a high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from the Yahweh the Father. Let us continue on. Grace to Howard now makes his comment on Revelation 21:9-10. He says, the Lamb's wife is the city. Well, that's hard to accept and understand in a simple term. Because I don't believe the Lamb's wife is a solid brick city. I think that they're living people. That represents the Lamb's wife. Let's go and see what John saw of the foundations. He saw the foundations, more than one. He saw 12 foundations. And the walls and the building of the holy city. He did not see people. He called the city the Lamb's wife. The only way it could be the Lamb's wife is that there's purified saints that live in that city. That's who the Lamb's wife is. If the city is a lamb, or if the people, the saints that live in the city, is the Lamb's wife, and if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then the five wise ones would then end up being his bride. Then who is the bride? Well, I just told you. For the kingdom must be the saints of the kingdom of Daniel 2:44-45 that are set up in the last days in the 12th hour by Yahshua. It must be the bride. For the people of the Yahweh's church are the guests. That's the laity. And are represented by the virgin. No. For the people of the Yahweh, of Yahweh's church, are the guests. That's the list, the membership, and are represented by the virgin. For the same thing is true in this parable, as we find in the parable of the king going in for the examination of the guests for the marriage, one of whom he found without the wedding garment on. Those whom he examines are the guests. For the summarizing then, the people are the guests, the kingdom is the bride, And Yahshua is the groom. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did the Yahshua come unto the earth where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did. For he came where they both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. If he came to the earth and had a door of his own to shut or to open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come to his kingdom, and unless the guests enter on time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock and the door will not be opened unto them. Since this coming of the bridegroom, Yahshua, son of Yahweh, is obviously not the visible second coming of Yahshua to take to heaven his people, who shall meet him in the air of 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17, we should be able to find in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31 and 32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another. That's what's going on right now with Donald Trump. As a shepherd divided his sheep from the goats. Did these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud to where the just risen dead along with the living saints will meet him in the air? As in 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17? Is that what we just read? No. It says here that at this coming he will gather all nations before him, and then he will sit down on his throne and separate them. He will put the goats on the left and the sheep on the right. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done that caused them to be thus judged and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil? Let's do it again. Well, we can see now clearly why we need the extra oil, the message of the judgment for the living. Well, that came in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Elijah David, with the 11th hour, at the 11th hour call, Matthew 20, verse 6, has called at the end of the 11th hour, Kermit, Texas, 2002, as we as Adventists have been preaching the judgment for the living for 100 years or more, and yet never even for a moment did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that the judgment included the separation of the righteous and the wicked. Okay, so we're in the judgment of the living right now. For sure. Have been now since 2003. You cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in Matthew 25 is a judgment which is to take the place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nations. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth, since moreover this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves, it is true that it is not a work to be done in the heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now we plainly see that Yahshua in Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living. And in the connection with this subject, we find that Malachi says the same thing, namely that after a messenger has prepared the way, that's the antithetical logic, Malachi 4:5, Yahshua will suddenly come to his temple to purify it, Matthew 3:1. When he comes, it is not to judge the dead to the heavenly sanctuary, but to judge the living in the earthly sanctuary. And if Yahshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is Yahshua going to sit? Daniel 2, we find the description and interpretation of the great image which the king of the Babylon saw in a dream. We as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only the Adventists, but only Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from Babylon's time down unto today. We also understand that the total kingdom represents the nations and the existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, as in the Toe kings, shall Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Forasmuch as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. For the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and this to an interpretation thereof sure. For the Daniel here describes how the earth's governments come to their end, not how the earth comes to its end, for he interpreted the stone to be the kingdom, and that stone represents the kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44-45, the everlasting kingdom of heaven, that Yahshua sit upon the throne of, here in the 12th parabolic hour. And it is Yahweh's kingdom that we will smite the nations. Not Yahshua's coming from the heaven to take up the saints, as we Adventists have taught. Jeremiah calls the kingdom Yahweh's battle axe, Jeremiah 51:20. What plainer language could be used to say that the kingdom is going to be set up before the nations come to their end? For the trouble, some have believed in this is not because of the language that the Bible used, but the trouble is with our preconceived ideas that were built up throughout the years, and the only way we can drive out our former erroneous ideas is to believe just what the Bible says. Now let us turn to Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, when the house of the Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doing. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land, and for their idols, and wherewith they had polluted it, and I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed throughout the countries according to their way and according unto their doing. I judged them. This says that because of the evils of the people, Yahweh dispersed them throughout the countries. Ezekiel 36:20. And when they entered into the heathen whither they went, they profaned my holy name, where they said unto them, these are the people of the Yahshua, and are gone forth out of his land. For they profaned the name when it was said of them that they are the people of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, gone out of his land. Is it not profaning Yahweh's name for the Gentiles to have driven Yahweh's people out of their own land and become rulers over them after Yahweh had miraculously brought them there and set them up to be the greatest kingdom, even his kingdom on earth? Could not the Gentiles see or feel that they had successfully defeated Yahweh's purpose for them, for Yahweh's people, having brought this great curse upon themselves through their disobedience, thus profaning Yahweh's holy name in the midst of the heathen whither they went? Okay, let's reread this last paragraph. For the Yahweh had so miraculously brought them there and set them up to be their greatest kingdom, even his kingdom on earth, could not the Gentiles feel that they had successfully defeated Yahweh's purpose for them, for Yahweh's people, having brought this great curse upon themselves through their disobedience, thus profaning Yahweh's holy name in the midst of the heathen whither they went? It has been brought up to the many times that the Gentiles took Yahweh's people captive because Yahweh was not able to defend his own kingdom, and there he was unable to fulfill his promise unto Israel. Thus was the name profaned among the heathen, all because of the disobedience of Yahweh's own people. Ezekiel 36:21-22. But I had pity for mine holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Therefore, say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahshua, or Yahweh the Father, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for my holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whither you went. It was because Yahweh could no longer tolerate the sins of his people, that he threw the Gentiles, had to disperse them. For the heathen did not know that, though now Yahweh says he will do something about it for his holy name's sake, not because his people are good. The next verses state plainly that he will do what he will do. Ezekiel 36:23-24. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahshua, saith the Yahweh, Father, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all the countries and will bring you into your own land. To those who ask how Yahweh can defend his name, now since the heathen have dispersed throughout the nation, the ancient kingdom of his people, we need only to read to them what the Yahweh here says, that he will gather his people back from all countries and show them and the heathen that he will yet honor his name by sanctifying himself in them before the heathen. Ezekiel 36:25-27. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. For a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Since all of this takes place when the Yahweh gathers his people from among the heathen, then no one can dodge the fact that unless we go into the land where the cleansing will take place, we will not be cleansed and we will not receive the new heart and Yahweh's Spirit. After we have been taken from among the heathen, Yahweh will sprinkle clean water upon us to cleanse us. By this we are to understand that until Yahweh gathers us from among the heathen, we cannot be clean. After he cleanses us, we will be without spot. For the judgment time, we must remember, is a cleansing time as well as a separating time. For the judgment for the living takes place when the Yahweh cleanses his people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. This work is to be done for his people after Yahweh has returned them unto their own land. This chapter tells us that we will never be clean until Yahweh gathers us from all the heathen and makes us what we ought to be. For the devil, however, wants to convince us that there is to be neither a land unto which Yahweh's people are to go, nor a cleansing. Let us read further, Ezekiel 36:28. And you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. For the land that Yahweh gave unto our fathers is Palestine, because the children of Israel were dispersed, the name was profaned, and to show that he indeed rules over the earth and the people, he will gather out his people from the nations and sit them right back in their own land and sanctify himself in them. Ezekiel 36:29-30. I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn and will increase it and lay no famine upon you, and I will multiply the fruit of the tree and the increase of the field, that she shall receive no more reproach of the famine among the heathen. If the land of our fathers, and of this chapter, means heaven, there would be no heathen in existence to witness any more reproach of the famine. And thus, the last clause of the Ezekiel 36:30 should be unnecessary and meaningless. Ezekiel 36:31. Then shall you remember your own evil ways and your doings that were not good, and shall loathe yourself in your own sight for your iniquities and for your abomination. After Yahweh has returned his people unto their own land and changed their hearts and put within them his spirit, then will they hate their own evil doings. They will be genuinely sorry for them. This is the revival and reformation which Yahweh calls for and which he himself will work in his people. Now let us turn to the next chapter of Ezekiel 37:15-24. For the word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companions. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, the 10 tribes in the north, and for all the house of Israel, his companion, and join them one to another, and to the one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. And when the children of the people shall speak unto thee, saying, Wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by these? Say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh, the Father, Behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim. This is actually talking about the son. Thus saith Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, Behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of the Israel, his fellow, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Joseph, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. And the sticks whereon thou writest shall be in thine hand before their eyes, and say unto them, Thus saith Yahshua, son of Yahweh, Behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, whether they be gone, and will gather them on every side, and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of the Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all, and there shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgression. For I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them. So shall they be my people, and I will be their Yahshua, and David, my servant, shall be the king over them. And they shall have one, a shepherd, for they shall all walk in my judgment and observe my statutes and do them. For the ancient kingdoms of Judah and Israel were dispersed. Now, however, the Yahshua says that he will bring them back into their own land and join them into the one kingdom where he will sanctify himself in them. When the Yahshua does this with his people, the heathen will learn who the Yahweh is and what are the purposes in the earth. or what are his purposes in the earth. I believe that the subject of the kingdom is one of the plainest of all subjects. In fact, the scriptures dealing with it actually need no interpretation if we believe what the Bible says, for it plainly states just what it means and is in the perfect harmony throughout its prophecies, parables, and symbols. For the only trouble there could be is that we have put an erroneous idea into our minds that there is to be no kingdom of Yahweh on the earth before the second coming of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, here in the 12th parabolic hour, while probation still lingers, and that idea has to be taken out, for it is unscriptural. For the Daniel 2 talks of the kingdom of the Yahweh, the Father, the kingdom of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, saying that it shall not be left unto another people, but it will stand forever and will grow and fill the whole earth. Though there will be only 144,000 cut by Yahweh on night and taken to Mount Zion, yet they as the servants and as the first fruits, Revelation 7:1-8, and Revelation 14:1-5, are together in the great multitude which no man should number of the Revelation 7:9-10. Thus will they enlarge the kingdom that is founded to fill the earth. That is what, let's read that again. Thus will they enlarge the kingdom that is founded to fill the earth. That is what Yahshua purposes to do with his people. If we would be among the wise virgins, we will not fight against Yahweh setting up his kingdom, but rather we will study about it and thus procure the extra oil. We will work for it, and we will also certainly with understanding pray as the Yahshua himself taught us to pray, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done in the earth as it is in heaven. This brings the close of our study. For this hour contest is the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives.